With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The next chapter with Prim's Ripipat is a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody, it's Prim. Welcome to the next chapter presented by Baron Davis and Slick Studios. Speaking of BD, today we wrap up season two of the next chapter with the one and only Baron Davis, aka the godfather of Los Angeles basketball. I wouldn't necessarily say we save the best for last, because obviously every one of our guests are equally important and special. But BD does have a very special place, at least within the context of this show, as the executive producer and also founder of Slick Studios. I mean, he's played such an integral role in supporting and fueling and really just keeping the show alive. And for that, I am deeply, deeply grateful. But his story definitely aligns with the concept of this show. One more time. 3, 2, 1. The next chapter with Prim's Ripipat is a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. The next chapter with Prim's Ripipat is a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody, it's Prim. Welcome to the next chapter presented by Baron Davis and Slick Studios. Speaking of BD, today we wrap up season two of the next chapter with the one and only Baron Davis, aka the godfather of Los Angeles basketball. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say we save the best for last, because obviously every single one of our guests are equally important and special. But I will say BD does have a special place, at least within the context of this show, since he is the executive producer and founder of Slick Studios. And he has played such an integral role in supporting and fueling and keeping the show alive. And for that, I am deeply, deeply, deeply grateful. But his story does perfectly align with the concept of this show. And I'm really excited for you to hear more about his fascinating journey, which has a lot of twists and turns, from South Central LA living with his grandmother, to the esteemed Santa Monica prep school in Crossroads, to McDonald's All-American, to UCLA, to the NBA, where he had a 13-year professional career and became a two-time NBA All-Star and two-time NBA steals leader. I mean, he could have stopped there, but he didn't. And not only has he remained a fixture within NBA circles as a basketball analyst, but also someone who's really focused on giving back to the community through basketball, but he became an actor, a filmmaker, a producer, director, documentarian, investor, entrepreneur, also father, just so many things. And as I was preparing for this conversation and doing some research, I started to realize just how many interviews he's done, and not just in sports, but with so many other outlets and shows, just because of his wide-ranging interests and projects. And in listening back to these interviews, I started to notice how a lot of them seem to follow the same cadence and address the same areas of his life, most of which are highlighted on his Wikipedia page, which, by the way, I use a lot. I get it. So early in our interview, I posed the question, what's the one thing people have failed to ask when they're asking about your journey? And I asked that because I wanted to give him the opportunity to tell a different side of his story, an untold aspect of his story. And his answer was, how? How did I do it? That's what people have failed to ask me. And that became the basis of our conversation. So rather than talking about the what he achieved and what he did, and exploring the how he made it this far, how he overcame these obstacles, how he found his North Star through and beyond basketball, by asking how, we can have a much better appreciation and understanding of just who Baron is, not just as a former athlete, but today as a person. So without further ado, here we are, BD and I, in sunny Los Angeles, California, on the set of Slick Studios.
Yourself or listen to yourself, I would have brought a TV or monitor and kind of play a little part of you so you could watch yourself.
Too bad.
That's not funny.
Too bad. If is the biggest word in that sense. If you would have.
But you watch yourself play basketball. Mm-hmm. A lot.
No. Not a lot. Just if I'm with somebody or my kids, I'm always like trying to show my kids, and then I just start watching. I love basketball. I just love basketball, whether it's watching myself, old 80s, 90s, other dudes. Like, I just love basketball and love, you know, just everything that comes with it. There's just so much appreciation, respect, and beauty in the art, you know, mm-hmm. just like the art form of the sport that, you know, that's like, I can fall asleep watching basketball games. I used to fall asleep watching basketball.
Wow. So were you one of those people that like would sleep with a basketball, literally? It seems like you genuinely like really, really love it. And it sounds obvious, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of elite athletes who they love it, but they won't like sleep with the object, or they won't, you know, dive into it the way others do.
Yeah, I mean, it's by my bed or in the bed, you know what I mean? I'm not like holding it, cuddling it. That would be a little too much.
Not your stuffed animal.
I'm too old for that. but no, I still sleep with a basketball on my bed or beside my bed. It's for me, it's like, it's my instrument. It's my tool. So whether I'm now creating, writing, I know that's hard to say. Like if I'm writing, I'm dribbling to collect my thoughts, to collect the story, to, you know, write down the songs or the words or whatever it is. It's like basketball is like my instrument. Even if I don't have a ball, like you may see me in the grocery store just, oh, you know what I mean? Just making a move. That's just... It just allows me to have like this freedom, this space to like live in a world that is like completely mine. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I would, you know, it's like you can relate it to an artist painting. You can relate it to a scientist cooking up something. You know, to me, that's art. When you like not even thinking about something and you're like, it's around you. It's your energy. It's like you see so many different layers to it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
That's so interesting. And it tells me that your relationship with basketball continues to be good, because there are some athletes that step away from it and they don't want to have anything to do with it. They'll throw away their trophies. They'll separate from the community. They don't even bother. You know, sometimes they'll take a little break from even watching it or engaging with it. So that kind of tells me that you still have a really good relationship with basketball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been up and down for sure. You know, I would say overall, it's like I wouldn't be here without basketball. But also, like, basketball is the thing that broke my heart. You know what I mean? And, like, you know, you And I think, and I feel like you, in order to get to a place of understanding, like you have to be heartbroken. You have to have failed success and failures. And, you know, like I've been through a lot with basketball, dealing with people, dealing with teams, institutions, fighting, you know what I mean? And it's just like, there's so much shit going on, right? It's like, this is the only thing that you can actually trust, right? Mm-hmm. That because it got you to a place, but along this journey, like all of the different people, because of this thing, you know what I mean? This ball, like all of the different people and their collective energy, like are attached to that equally or mm-hmm. trying to figure out a way to draw an attachment, you know, to me. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like this journey, right, has involved so many people, good, bad, great, you know, amazing. Dreams have been carried out, fulfilled, wishes, hopes. I mean, it's like shit. It's no, what more can I, you know, I know Magic Johnson. I know Michael Jordan. I love Larry Bird. I had a conversation with Larry Bird. I know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kobe. Yeah. I used to have Kobe was my dog. I mean, I can walk up to Steph Curry, have a conversation. Like,
yeah.
Come on. You know what I mean? It's like, that's it. Everything I dreamed of as a kid. Every NBA player I ever wanted to meet, everything about basketball, like I've pretty much lived it.
And even beyond like your basketball circles, the Kate Hudsons of the world, your crossroads experience is so fascinating to mm-hmm. me. And that allow you to get into circles that I would imagine coming from South Central LA, you probably wouldn't have engaged with maybe later on.
Maybe never.
Yeah.
If I hadn't gone to Crossroads. Because LA is probably one of the most segregated cities in America. You know, and it's also defined by the haves and the have nots. And, you know, having an opportunity to go to Crossroads, you know, people always say, oh, you from South Central, you went to Crossroads. Like, how was Crossroads? It was like, once again, it's the journey, like learning the city, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. 45 to an hour and a half, sometimes it would take to get to school from the middle of, you know, the city all the way to the beach. And then going to a school where you see in the beach for the first time, and then every week you can go, you know what I mean? It's yeah. nothing. It's nothing to people over here. And so I always say, like, to kind of like describe my experience at Crossroads is like, I was a fresh prince, but I went back to the hood. You know what I mean? It was no Uncle Phil or none of that. It was like, you know, the fresh prince from the hood. So I was going to a school to me that was like Disneyland and trying to stay there as long as possible because I knew I was safe. And then when I go back home, it wasn't that I wasn't safe. It's just my awareness had to change, you know? Mm-hmm. So I had to go and create the Disneyland for myself. Living in South Central because it was shit really going on. Live. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so how do you block all that out and where do you go? You know, and I think Crossroads started helping me understand people, you know, mm-hmm. started helping me understand like there is a history outside of the history that I'm learning. You know, it start having me like pay attention to detail, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Start learning how to have conversations or listening to conversations that people were having like about business and life and like, you know, watching parents and their kids actually have real conversations about life and politics and like the kids had an opinion, you know what I mean? So a lot of times I was just a fly on the wall mm-hmm. and trying to bring those skills and those things back to my neighborhood and translate that in a way that we need to be doing this too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That was very difficult, but You know, it's like, that's how I was learning. Mm-hmm. And I was learning stuff here to get in it. You know, it's like Crossroads was good because it just kind of opened up my world to realize that, you know, there's so many people, there's so many cultures, there's so many struggles, there's so many fights, there's so much history to people, right? And then you are allowed, right, to question everything. You are allowed to be whoever you want to be.
And you got, you're saying you got that from Crossroads.
Yeah. And you can change your mind. You can change your mind again. You can change your mind again. You can change your mind again. Mm. And you can keep changing your mind until you figure out what you want to do. And I think that was the beauty of Crossroads, because 1 year somebody came as, you know, they wanted to be a gothic person. The next year that gothic person was like, now a prepster. The next year that prepster was now like a skateboarder and a hipster. Then that person graduated and went to, I forget what school, Stanford. And so I started learning that be whoever you want. You can be in the drama department and then be like, yeah, that ain't for me. I really like art, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not quitting, right? It was just like, I want to try something new. Whereas like, I grew up in a culture where you start something and you had to finish it. You know what I mean? And you couldn't quit.
I feel like that's our culture today, especially when you talk about like youth sports, early specialization, kids declaring that they want to be an NFL player, NBA professional, fill in the blank at 7 years old. And then for me, growing up in an immigrant family, Asian background, like there's no question, like my path was, all right, at 12 years old, what do you want to do? Which one do you want to pick? Yep. You got to pick this. You got to dedicate the rest of however long to that. So that's so interesting that you had that experience at Crossroads. And I think that explains so much, because out of all the people that I've met and interviewed, the only person that comes to mind might be like a Marcellus Wiley that I've talked to, because he's coming from Compton, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but he's a social chameleon. And when I think of you, you are such a social chameleon. Like you really, really, depending on what the environment it is, and I've listened to multiple interviews, mm-hmm. and like depending whatever the context, the environment, the people, like you will just, you'll shift and change. And I don't know if I've really seen that. Do you notice that about yourself? And tell me if I'm like inaccurate, if I'm reading this wrong.
I feel like it is a talent, you know, to be relatable, for people to feel like you're accessible. And so if you build that, like, I think you have to also use the right words, you know? I always say, like, man, just pay attention to, like, people's words. And, you know, for me, it's like when I'm talking, whoever it is, I'm trying to relate, mm-hmm. right? And when I go home, like, to practice, like, I have to figure out how to talk about a kid starting a lemonade stand and then how that kid becomes Paul Newman and how that's a bit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I'm always trying to figure out like what's the narrative of the story, mm-hmm. even in conversations that I hear now. Sometimes it's annoying though. I mean,
what's annoying that you have
like,
to change?
Like that I'm always thinking about, you know, like, I would say like, maybe that's my practice, because practice is annoying, you know what I mean? But it's just like, kind of like rehearsing, like trying to solve problems. And if people are like ideating on something, trying to figure out the solution and then give it immediately right back, you know? So I would say that like, that's my practice as like a creative, as a business person, you know, as a networker, or whatever you want to call it, you know, a connector, it's all based on like listening to people and like solving problems. So when I speak, it's like I'm trying to make sure that I'm not just on the panel just talking shit are like making you gassed up and you're like, oh, I feel good, but like, what am I gonna do? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of people, you know, it's just a lot of people out here that are doing things for reasons that are self-serving. And I just don't, I mean, I'd rather just kind of like live to serve people.
Mm-hmm. You talk about just your history and a little bit about your past. And I'm curious about, you know, there's a lot, you have a lot of titles and labels, especially today now at 43 years young. Mm-hmm. So, you know, godfather of Los Angeles basketball, two-time NBA All-Star, you're a basketball analyst, filmmaker, producer, director, entrepreneur, investor. The list goes on. But I'm curious about, after having listened to multiple interviews, I feel like they kind of follow a normal trajectory of like, okay, mm-hmm. you started basketball at this age, South Central, Crossroads, yeah. UCLA, NBA, boom, retire, all that stuff. What's the one thing that people forget or fail to ask about your path that's really important?
How did I do it? They don't know the, I mean, it's just like, you don't know the details, but I don't know. I mean, it's people usually ask me about basketball. It was just, I would say like, how did you do it? You know what I mean? Like, if you could change 5 decisions that you made that wouldn't affect who you are today, but mm-hmm. could ultimately like make you a better person, what were those 5 decisions that you made? What would, like, where would you be? You know what I mean? Because a lot of times, like, we look at people who are successful and, you know, we get an opportunity as the people that are successful to, like, share our story and our journey. But a lot of that should just be, like, hella positive.
Yes.
it'd be yes. super positive. You know, it's, like, super positive, super motivational and, like,
We don't highlight the low lights.
Some, yeah, well, people, like, we're going through the worst shit, the same shit you're going through. Mm-hmm. Magnified, you know what I mean? And so people don't ask about, like, all the bad mistakes, all the bad shit I did, you know what I mean? All the, like, times I was an asshole, you know what I mean? Like, when I lost, when I was down, like, what was that doing when I was injured? Like, what, you know, it's like, nobody asks about that because don't nobody want to hear that shit. You know what I mean?
I do.
Because people really going through it. And so they don't, a lot of times it's like, you don't want to connect, really make the connection, because if you do, then it's probably some shit that you're dealing with too. It's like, you know, going to church and the preacher giving a sermon, and you're like, damn, did somebody tell him I was coming today? You know what I mean? Like, damn. You know, it's like, it's that connection and figuring out, you know, yeah. how to, like, just make yourself better, because that's the whole part of the journey again, you know?
So how did you do it? I'll ask you the question that no one else has asked, giving you the opportunity to talk about those lowlights or whatever you want to fill in.
Always kind of like just trusted my North Star. Always, I tried to stay sucker free.
Try to stay sucker free. Explain. What does that mean?
Because it's a lot of bad people out here. You know what I mean? And there are a lot of people that are professional suckers. Blood suckers, money suckers, energy suckers, just people who just, they don't know how to give shit. They just know how to take. And so, like, I would say, you know, even a lot of times dealing with those people, right? But knowing that, you know, they ain't getting no further than nowhere. You know what I mean? And just realizing that, you know, when I say stay sucker free, it's like, there's no way, like, your reputation, my reputation, Like, my reputation gonna be what I choose my reputation to be. I'm not gonna let people kind of pawn their reputation off on me. Mm-hmm. So I gotta get this leech off me, you know what I mean? Because that's not your blood, it's my blood. You know what I mean? It's not your blood, it's my blood. And I think people do that in business. People come around athletes and they wanna, you know, oh man, da-da-da-da-da. Like people are so good at making you feel good and making you feel like, you know, like this is where you need to go. You know what I mean? And it's almost like you see a lot of people get hypnotized.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, it was like growing up in LA, becoming a millionaire at 19, you know what I mean? Coming from South Central, you know, having dudes that I hoot with that were now like going to college, going to jail, you know what I mean? And it was like, it was that, college, jail, streets. And so now becoming a target, however you look at it, right? It also forced me to like accept that.
That you're a target.
Absolutely. And so, because in LA, you're always a target. Whether you're an innocent bystander, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that mentality for me was like, all right, I'm a target. I know what's coming. So I'm like listening and I'm trying to like, in real time, learn what is happening, understand what's going on in the NBA, you know? And so it was like, the most important thing I would say was like, people who were like, who had something for me, but didn't give me anything, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It's like, those were the things that I was trying to like shake off and avoid, because I was like really on like this journey on my own. There was no person that I could call and be like, hey man, I'm having a hard time. Yeah, like I didn't have like a mom and dad in my journey. You know what I mean? My grandma was just there and I wasn't gonna bother her. So it was like, really, I was like a grown person. You know what I mean? So it was just, there was never a moment or a person that I can think of where I can just pick up the phone and feel at ease. You know what I mean? And so with that, it was just learning how to like try and get over on somebody before they got over on me. And like when I was 18, 19, and then as I started getting older, I was like, well, I don't have to allow anybody to get over on me because I don't have to be around them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And if I start moving and doing what I want to do, then I won't be hypnotized by whatever the bright lights, the jewelry, the fame, and the fortune. I'll just like, hey, I'll be my own agent. You know what I mean? So that cut out a lot. Me and my homeboys have just managed my career. That cut out a lot. You know what I mean? New friends, new homies, and things of that nature. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to take this agent money, and I'm going to try things. And so that gave me kind of like my opportunity to build a case study for myself by, you know what I mean? Building a business around the things that I always wanted to do. And so I would say now, you know, towards the middle, the third chapter of my career, there's a lot of things that I can do or know how to do.
You have a lot going on.
Because I was 20 years old. I was my own agent.
That's unbelievable. So how you did it, I'm going to try really hard to summarize it. You clearly did it on your own, self-made. For the most part, it sounds like of your childhood, outside of your grandmother, you didn't have this support system in the sense of like that person that you could call. You were guided by your North Star. And then once you were up and running, you eliminated and cut out the fat and kept your circle really tight. So I know that you were raised by your grandmother, mm-hmm. And what about your mother and father? I don't know too much about that background.
Yeah, they just had hard times when I was growing up. My mom, my dad, rest in peace, he passed away, I think when I was like 21. Like the day before we played the Lakers, the first time I was inviting him to an NBA game, he literally died the day of the game when we were flying in from Utah. But like, you know, he grew up rough, South Central, on some hard times, you know, him and my mom the same. And so, you know, they fell prey to all the negative things, you know, in LA and in the streets. And so it was like hard to have, there was nothing good coming out of none of that. But I would say the beauty of it all is that like me and my mom are so tight now. She's sober, she's straight. And like we've been rocking and like, you know, just being best friends for the last, you know, the last 10, 12 years, you know what I mean? And like really just knowing each other and like getting to know her, you know what I mean? Cause I feel like we miss a lot of time just kind of like trying to get it together.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, that for me, it was like, if I did not become my own agent and do shit my way, then I would have not spent the time. You know what I mean? It was like, it was spending the time to like, be like, fuck fame. I got to make sure like this shit is right. You know what I mean? Fuck Cabo and going to Bali. And I wanted to do that shit, but I had to go make sure like, my mind was straight, you know what I mean? And so once I got to the NBA and I realized like I can do what I want.
Yeah.
And money was a resource to do what I want. I wanted to use that to like try and solve problems or fix things.
So how you do it is you really take chances. Like you're calculated and you think about it, but you don't really mess around. Because there's not a lot of people that, after not having the relationship maybe that they would have wanted with their parents, take the time to work on that relationship and heal. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a few friends, a lot of friends that has that dynamic, and a lot of them don't even want to touch it.
Yeah, it's touchy. It's touchy because, you know, there's a kid there that the adult version of you can't, you know, like you don't know if this kid is gonna ever forgive you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like, you know, like as an adult, when you think about that kid and you think about what that kid was going through, you know, for me, it took me, I believe it was Father's Day, to go to my dad and like bring him flowers and say Happy Father's Day. And, you know, and kind of like my humor and candor and just also my confidence, I was like, I'm the daddy now, motherfucker. I'm the daddy now.
Well, you're the executive producer, you know what I mean?
And that's what I said. I'm like, I'm daddy now. Like, I got, you know, like, I got you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a man, and like now it's like I'm going to NBA games and I'm seeing dudes with their daddies in the stands, like real relationships. Like, oh, he took me to practice and shit. I'm like, man, like, fuck it. Like, if you weren't how you were, I wouldn't have been who I was. Mm-hmm. So I actually came to thank you, because if you were in my life, especially how you are, you're probably fucked my shit up, bro. And he started laughing. We started laughing. And I realized, and I was like 21, 22 years old, I realized like, and it took everything in my power to go see this man. You know what I'm saying? It took, I was scared. I was nervous. I was like,
So what got you there to that
point? It was my daddy. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he was never around. It was just like, I didn't fuck with him. You know what I mean? And you know, I think my sister was telling him that he was sick. I should go see him and shit like that. And it was just like, it just took a lot. It took a lot to like just to get out, you know, to like, first of all, I don't even remember, but I'm like, where the fuck did I buy them flowers from? You know what I mean? It was just like, it was all kind of like this like numb moment, but it's something behind you pushing you like dog, when you do this, like, you're going to be a man. You know what I mean? Like when you do this, like, it ain't going to even be, there is no conversation to have about what happened. You feel me?
Yeah.
It's like, all right, dog, let's go. We good. You know what I'm saying? And, like, that was kind of like, a lot of times we as successful people that come from fucked up places or, you know, fucked up situations, we don't want to, like, we live in it. We don't want to address it. But, like, it's okay. We can move. Like, he had me. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. I wouldn't be in the NBA if it wasn't for him. Mm-hmm. Right now, if you're a bat, if you didn't parent, you know, the way that we saw that shit in books or the way I saw it in school, it's okay, bro, because I am who I am. And I got you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So now you can tell me, like, what the fuck is, like, this lump in the back of my neck? Do you have one? Do you have, like, this? Like, is one toe longer than that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, tell me what the fuck, like, do you have these things? Like, I need to know, you know what I mean? And a lot of times we got to go and fuck with our parents no matter what, because it's going to make us better parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because we have to know.
Yeah.
What were you going through? When you were 35, when you was 40 years old, like, what was you saying in life? You know what I mean? Like, good or bad. It's the information is like, that's where you come from. And so, you know, for me, it's like, just understanding that, respecting that, and not having the parents didn't mean that I didn't, like, have parents around. You know what I mean? And so you, like, go and find that village. My grandmother was, like, the most solid person in the world. Mm. You know what I mean? She was the most solid person in the world. Like, there was, everybody loved her. You know what I mean? And she stayed solid and she gave love. You know what I mean? And so, like, that was enough for me to know I had one person. You know what I'm saying? And everybody else, like, chipped in and loved how they loved. But, you know, sometimes you just... you gotta go find your family.
Yeah. I think that makes so much more sense because when I come here to your studio, which is such an interesting, cool space, and it's pretty big. I don't know, it's like 5,000, 6,000 square, I don't even know, whatever it is. But the thing that struck me as I got to meet your team finally in person, I was like, that's so interesting. He's like really created this family, this sense of community. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you're somebody that really has your hands on every single person and every single project. Mm-hmm. And now, I think that loyalty and really connecting with people who are authentic, the sucker-free mentality, mm-hmm. like that makes so much more sense.
Yeah, it's like you said, cut through the fat. You recognize talent. You recognize good people. People want outlets. People want voices. You know, and like, shit, I do too, right? And I want to identify dope talent, dope creators, people who can, you know, champion thought and champion what the fuck they're passionate about. And that's why, you know, that's why Bill Slick was like, you look at social media, you look at YouTube, you look at all these medium platforms, and it's like, you have to shift through all the bullshit just to find good people or a good conversation. Or a good group of, you know, content, or a good, like, it's so, like, all over the place. That was Slick. It was just like, man, if we could tag a person, and that person tags a person, that person tags a person, then you got all, you know, solidified, authentic, validated people in an ecosystem. And, you know, it's like, we all kind of like the same shit because we're all a part of the culture. Mm-hmm. Now, if we can start tagging and nominating and upgrading and upping people, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And giving them a platform where they can create and collaborate and co-create and get their shit out and have distribution, then I like our chances. Mm-hmm. Because it's ultimately like, I just want to see all that shit in one space. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's hard.
I
want to
see your show, Marshall, at Jason's own show, Glass's show, Fuzzy show, like all the podcast, Jason Maiden show, all of the podcasts and all the shit that we're building and bringing in is really just a family label ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Run your shit. We all work together. We all help each other. And at the end of the day, like, you know, high tides rise all ships.
Yeah.
And so, it don't matter who gets the Emmy. It doesn't matter who gets the Webby. It doesn't matter who gets the big major deal. It's like, we're going to celebrate wins. And as long as we continue to celebrate wins, we'll be in a winning system, winning culture. And practice will be practice. And game time is game time. And all you want to do really is just be on the team and play.
So you're really acting as that bridge. I forgot what interview I was listening to. I mean, it was like All the Smoke or some one of those interviews. And it was really good. They did a really good job. But you talk about being that bridge. And I think at the time you were talking about maybe bridging the gap between South Central and Crossroads and those two communities. But I think over time, it seems like you're really that connector of bridging the gap between all these different mm-hmm. communities. So going back to raised by your grandmother, knowing a little bit more about your mom and dad. So you talked about that North Star. What was that North Star? What was the thing that was leading you in terms of how you did it? Was it basketball or was it just like a general philosophy?
Well, it was basketball for sure. And then it's curiosity. Mm. And it's wanting to do shit. I want to actually be able to do stuff. Like, I'll probably never learn to play the piano. Or I may learn to play the piano. You know what I mean? Like, I challenge myself. It's the curiosity. I think the North Star is, like, the curiosity. Basketball was, like, the vehicle. Mm. Right? So once basketball started becoming, like, the thing that kept me going straight and narrow, right? Then I was like trying to just catch that North Star. When I got to the NBA, I realized that basketball was a business. You know what I mean? And basketball was like, had so much shit involved in it. You know what I mean? Then my North Star, the star started getting further away. And I start seeing like the responsibility in the basketball, right? That I had, right, where I was in time and what I wanted to do and what everybody around, all the athletes around me wanted to do, but we didn't have access. And so I said, you know, I'm going to go do this. Oh, shit, like, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm going to go do this because so-and-so said, like, that's what he wants to do. And so I started doing things, right, or trying to do things that our crew, our ecosystem of like NBA dudes and shit like that, like nobody was busting out the seams or like trying to poke holes, mm-hmm. right, in that bubble that they was trying to put us in. And so I was just listening and like poking holes.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean that your transition from basketball was a little bit easier or was
Hell
it still?
No.
Okay.
Oh,
because you went
God.
Out really.
Hell no, it was the worst.
Was that the hardest part?
Was that the hardest time of my life?
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, you know, like you have some hard times in life. And I think each moment and situation is special and unique. But that was like the hardest time of my life. And speaking about basketball and like my love and all this shit. After I got hurt, I was like, okay, I can't play basketball ever again. So I'm going to give myself amnesia.
Wow.
So I'm going to think that I never play basketball. And I'm going to treat myself that like I didn't play basketball.
So that goes along with the athletes that I've talked to where they just completely want to erase and forget that side of it. So you went through that phase.
I went through that big time. I went through that big time. And I was like an asshole to a lot of my fans. I apologize. But people would be like looking at me and I'd be like, what the fuck are you looking at? And I'm like, aren't you Baron Davis? I'm like, nope. And it was like not even thinking about like, but I was trying, like if somebody came up to me like, oh, you about basketball? Nah, bro, I'm cool. I couldn't talk about it. Didn't want to do it. You know what I mean? But like, it was just like something that I felt like I needed to do in order to distance myself from the fact that like, this was like, they, you know, I was on the castaway boat, you know what I mean? Getting further and further away from the shore. So I was like, all right, well, I'm a fisherman now. You know what I mean? I've never been to that island. And then I just started like, because you like ashamed, you embarrassed, you know, like you're seeing like your homeboys who are 2 or 3 years younger and they still rocking. And it's like, damn, dude, like, where am I? Where do I fit in? Like, where do I, you know, it's like, who am I? Who do I want to be? And like, the last thing you want to do is go around that because you get fucking excited. Your body feel good. You know what I mean? You want to play again. You want to be a part of it. And it's like, there's no room for you. Hmm. You know what I mean? And, you know, but I think now it's like, it's a great time to be a basketball player, retired basketball player. There's so many opportunities to like still do what you do. And fans are still, you know, supportive of like, you know, just the game. I think basketball, once I got that out of my system, I realized it was a documentary that I was gonna do. And it was there's a men's basketball league and like an NCAA tournament. And it's called the Masters of Basketball or something like that. Hmm. And I believe it's like 55 and up. And there's a tournament and these dudes, they in there like, I'll show you the trailer. But it was.
Wow.
When I did it, I didn't really realize like how that was going to impact me. And there was a guy who was, they were like, how old are you? He was like, I'm 86. And he was like, yeah, I think I'm going to play about another 2 or 3 years and I'm going to hang it up. And I was like, what am I doing? Yes. You know what I mean? Yes.
My time.
Wait, hold on. Start the clock. I'm about, if they getting down like that. And it was just like, it was the most like,
and how inspiring. Old were you?
This Where is was- like maybe six what? Or seven, maybe 8 years ago now. It's been a while, like 2013, 14.
So then you had your massive knee injury, 2012.
Yeah.
So then it must have been within the 2 years your injury. 2013,
it was like 2014.
Okay.
Because I remember I spoke at the NBA Tech Summit, met this young lady who was like programming us. And I think at the time she worked for Amazon and she was like, yo, my dad loves basketball. You have to like, and I was just like, all right, cool. Like I'll send a camera crew. Like I want to make content. But it was just it was a great plug. We didn't wind up doing anything. We should though. But the 5-minute trailer that was shot was like, it immediately changed my life. And I realized like, dude, I'm about to be hooping at 50, 60 years old. In the gym talking shit to my homeboys. Right. And then I start going back to the gym and like, you know, working out and getting back in the gym playing. And it was like, man, if I never play in the NBA again, like who knows? I go play in the G League, got a chance to play in the G League, went and play in the Big Three, which was, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But there's a league somewhere, you know, where I think is going to come out of this retirement situation and like allow for like something extremely complimentary to the NBA because basketball is just taking off. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that, you know, the NBA does it the best. G League is obviously cut from the NBA's cloth. But nobody else, like, you know, I like TBT and things like that, but it's like, it's so many. You got TBT, you got the Drew League, you got all these great places that's just like giving people an opportunity, even the Big Three giving people the opportunity to play. And it's like, but there's still like something that's going to come about where it's going to create a whole nother, you know, capture a whole nother audience and ecosystem of people who just love the game.
So that moment of seeing a, did you say he was like 86? Or so seeing that 86-year-old man continue to have a relationship with basketball sparked your interest and like, I can re-engage with basketball maybe in a different way. So it sounds like that might have led to maybe your return or comeback in 2015. But before we go there, you know, we kind of talk about like, how did you do it? You know, our the conversation oftentimes is focused on how we overcame and the resiliency. So I'm gonna put the microscope on that moment, that period that was like really difficult, because I think it's important for not only fans, but also athletes to really understand, right? Because that's the concept of this show, is like really putting a microscope on that part. So, and I find it interesting that you felt shame. Because I think to fans, they would say, I mean, this guy played for over 10 years, two-time NBA All-Star, like, you know, did all these things, you know, achieved such great heights. And it's not like you were pushed out. You suffered a serious injury. Yeah. You tore your MCL, LCL, everything, kneecap, all that other stuff. So, like, I think most people would be like, you went out.
Like great. A warrior, yeah, like a soldier. I mean, I respect all that. I appreciate all that. So, but it's like, I did not go out on my own terms.
So that's what it boils down to. You wanted to go out on your own terms.
Oh, yeah. I wanted, you know what I always envisioned as I started getting older? I was like, who is the young dude that's going to retire me? You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to wake up, go to a game and be like, damn, dude, Steph Curry just murdered me. The next day, Dame
you
Lillard
wanted that
just
instead
murdered
of...
me. Yeah, that's how I got to go. That's how I got to go, because I one, would have enjoyed it, appreciated it. And then, like, you know what I mean? It's like, it probably could have been something in that exchange that I could have gave them to. You know what I mean? So I kind of, like, missed out on, like, this whole generation of like PGs that, you know, we would have either been on battled or backup. You know what I mean? It's just like, I miss like that part. You know what I'm saying? And
like a give and
even
take.
Even playing in that era, it was just kind of like, damn, dude, like this is the era that was meant for me. You know what I mean? That's why I tried it with the G League. I thought I had a chance. I had a good chance with the G League, but I got injured again.
That was in 2015 and 16.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then now I just be hooping, but, you know, it's fun. Like, now basketball is fun, because the way they hoop now and the way they play is, like, all you got to do is be in shape and, like, have skills. So it's, you know, it's like, all right, I get to make a little money in the summer, you know, from some one-on-ones.
And making money on one-on-one. What are you going to the park and like hustling people? What are you doing?
When we after pickup, you know, there's always a sucker. There's always a fool who want to play some one-on-one for some money.
Who is doing that with you?
Man, young dudes, young NBA dudes with a lot of money. Dudes with new contracts.
That should be a show in itself.
So, I know, right? I'm down.
Yeah, trying to hustle BD on the court. Like
me hustling NBA dudes and dudes from overseas when they get their check.
That's great.
I'm like, man, you want to play one-on-one? Like, we start playing. I'm like, man, you want to play, like, you want to play for like 5,000? You want to play for 20,000?
That's hilarious, because I just saw on social media about Duhon putting a bet with Kobe that he wouldn't score like a triple double, and I forgot whatever game it was, right?
Oh, we did, yeah.
And he obviously lost that bet because you know Kobe doesn't lose. Kobe doesn't lose anything. He didn't lose anything.
Against Kobe.
So 2012 to 2016, was that the period that was you were mad? You were trying to figure your way through basketball.
I would say more so just kind of lost. I was lost. More lost.
So what did lost feel like and look like, and how did you find yourself?
It didn't feel like nothing. It didn't look like nothing. It was just like, you know, I couldn't walk really because of my knee. And so, like, I was in the bed for like 3 months with my legs straight like this. So then once my leg was out the cast, like, I had to work, like, trying to learn how to bend my shit. So first it was like, all right, I need to learn how to walk again. Wow. You know what I mean? Or like, I need to figure out how to bend my knee, you know? And I was like, yo, like, all I want to do is to be able to walk standing up. And then one day I was like, damn, dude, I'm walking. Like, what the fuck? And I was like, well, maybe I need to, like, if I can walk faster, you know what I mean? And be able to bend and, like, do a squat, like, that's all I want. Because then at least I can, like, walk, you know, shoot a free throw. I don't want to be a cripple. And then next thing you know, I'm walking. And I'm jogging. And I'm running. And I'm like, dude, what if I went and played basketball? And so I went and played basketball with my drunk homies and shit because they all fat and slow. And I was like, you know, moving like this, you know, because I was injured.
BD still got it.
So I was like, I can keep up. You know, I can keep up with these fools. They're going to get tired. And then I was like, oh, that was cool. And we hung out and it was just like, it wasn't the NBA, but it reminded me of like, what basketball give you, that love, that camaraderie. And then like every step of the way, it was just, I was just asking myself to accomplish something small. Hmm. And then even in my life, I was like, man, I was in such a fog. I was like, that part was like super chaotic.
And when was that?
Because that's like my grandma had died, you know, and then I hurt my knee, and you know what I mean? And so it was like.
And that was the time when you had your kids, right? Because you had and then, 2014 and 2016.
Then I had my kid in 2014. And so between that, it was just trying to figure out like who I wanted to be, what I wanted to be, like how I wanted to be. And then like, you know, it's like when I got hurt, I looked up and I'm like, yo, I got all this money. I got nothing to live for. Like, nobody to call, nothing to share with, things like that. And then, you know, got married, had a kid, and realized that, you know, like, damn, dude, like, I get a chance to be, like, an amazing father. You know what I mean? And so, like, I think my kids, you know, have really been, like, my reason for, like, going through the depression, the anxiety, the hit rock bottom, the rabbit hole, the like, you know, and like, I start realizing that I could, and then Batman is my favorite movie, Dark Knight, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm, you know, it's almost like the Batman scene when he goes all the way to the pit and he has to figure out how to get out. And a lot of times we do that to ourselves. We dig deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And we, you know what I mean? We always say, oh, we keep digging deeper, deeper and deeper holes. But it's not a deep hole. It's just a whole bunch of like bullshit in a little shallow pond. So you gotta, you know what I mean? Just step the fuck out and say, you know what? I don't have to hold myself accountable for rabbit holing. I can apologize to myself. I can forgive myself. I can go ask for forgiveness. I can start mending, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And patching up the things that I was ashamed of, I was embarrassed of, you know what I mean? And whatever comes with that, comes with it. But it's also a part of like who I am and who I'm gonna be and why I need to like be something.
Mm-hmm. I hear the description about the idea that this so-called rabbit hole was a lot shallower than you thought. However, in a lot of the research that I'm doing in doctoral training and all this stuff, it's crazy to look at some of the literature. I'm coming at it from a mm-hmm. academic perspective, yeah. But just to see how athletic retirement, they're finding, especially in today's modern day sports landscape, that retirement can be a traumatic experience that also leads to and precipitates mental health issues and disorders. So it's not, you are definitely not the first case. In the research that I'm doing, it's like, oh yeah, like here's another case of like retirement. And then it happens to lead to substance abuse or depression or anxiety or interpersonal issues or question identity loss, like fill in the blank, all right. of these things, you know, a loss in identity and structure and support and all these things. You just kind of go through that list. So I say that not necessarily to like counter what you're explaining, but to validate your experience in the sense of like what you went through, you're certainly not the only one. And it's hard, especially when you talked about like your North Star and all these people that were connected with this one thing, basketball. It kind of makes sense. Like when that exits your life, like it's just kind of like, well, God, what else is out there? Who am I?
But that wasn't the North Star. And that's what we have to realize. That's the star that other people paint for us. And then to add to mental health in retirement, right? How about mental health when you get the fucking money?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can't, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, motherfuckers retire. Excuse my language. What? Yeah. People retire and they got mental health issues and like, you know, concussions and all this shit. It's like, no, the journey, the start, before, you can't diagnose somebody after they already been fucked up. They've been fucked up for 40 years. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to retire. And it's like, you have to deal with real life shit. There is no escape. People who play sports or have high IQs or music and art and film, the reason why people make mistakes or like say, oh, because they already had it. And that was their escape. That is where they found a sucker, or a sucker found them and figured out how to take that and hide that and get them into the system. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they can get what they needed. They can get what they needed out. You know what I mean? And the problem is it goes back to the beginning. You know what I mean? Because everything is manufactured and on an assembly line, right? That nobody has the time to pay attention to if somebody is mentally fucked up.
Right. Yeah.
And dudes are. What? Or need the help, right?
Yes.
Because like, you know, I look at myself like, damn, dude, I done been through a whole bunch of shit or like movie type shit. And then I look at my teammates and I'm like, damn, dude, they going through a lot too. But like, they ain't me. You know what I mean? Like, they don't see themselves after. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They like, the people that they have around them are like, you know, like we all look into each other and cry for help. You know what I'm saying? Because like, it's like, yo, bro, I got like, damn, dog, you got like 30 leeches on you. It's like, yo, bro, you got like 4 leeches. And like, you know, if we could all like, we all need the help. So, and at the same time, we have to be so confident. Mm-hmm. We have to be so sure of ourselves. We have to be so without want, without need, right? We have to be indestructible. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, like, we have to also be vulnerable. You know what I mean? We have to be people's scapegoat, people's sounding board. You know, it's like a lot of giving and giving and giving, and nobody's fueling.
They're fueling the athlete facade. Baron Davis, the basketball player.
They're fueling what the stereotypes, the trends, the styles. They want you to like, they want to frame your background. Everybody want to put their collage pictures on your yearbook page and shit. That's what it is. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's like, you don't know who these people are. You know what I mean? On your yearbook page, or you don't know that party, or you didn't even know that you did like to drink. Mm-hmm. Right? You didn't know that you did like to gamble. You didn't know that you did. You know, it's like there's so much, there's a lot of the negative, or people like, hey man, you better than him, or da 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 da. And it's like building animosity and jealousy for your teammates. It's all that's, it's just all of it. And it's like, if we can hold on, if we could, if our generation can hold on to each other and shake out fall of leeches, you know what I mean? And, you know, you see what, like, from Allen Iverson to, like, what LeBron is doing, Steph Curry with, you know, golf, and J.R. Smith with golf, women's sports. It's just, like, our ecosystem, and I say our generation, are like, the barrier breakers. Mm. Like, we breaking glass ceilings. We punching holes in the bubbles because people realize that we need each other, you know, and so there's been more collaboration, more togetherness, more like champion and people speaking out, you know, to do that.
I love the collaboration aspect. I feel like the pandemic kind of pushed that forward. Mm-hmm. And I love that aspect. And then you kind of mentioned this like a few minutes ago, but when you were talking about the mental health and the journey during your career, and you're talking about the money and the fame, and I actually did my research apprenticeship on the transitional and lived experiences of African-American former professional and football players. And so one thing that I, when I was looking at, like, I had like 11 participants when I was like going through all these interviews and just like going through the data, there's something about the professional journey that it's like the money, fame, pressure, expectation. I mean, it really causes and creates so many issues. And it's a hard thing to navigate an experience that not a lot of people can relate to. Because I think from the outsider's view, they're like, okay, money, you got money, solved. Fame, good, you get everything you need. But it reminds me of a story where Josh Childress, former NBA, Stanford player, signs the biggest contract in European basketball history. He goes over there, and there's just all this money and all this hype. He's in Greece. And, you know, during our interview, he admits, he's like, I turned into a recluse. Like, ooh. I couldn't
handle
it.
You can't relate to no money.
And it seemed to kind of trigger his social anxiety. Ooh. So he goes on the court, you know, he's like airballing from the free throw line, all this other stuff. So it's more just kind of shedding light on, you know, just how hard, the dark side, the business side of professional sports.
Yeah, I always say, like, you know, you have a kid that never had nothing, $1 million with no instructions. You know, there's no instructions. There are no instructions, literally no instructions. There's no template. There's no call center. There's no crisis hotline for I just got $1 million. What do I do? You know what I mean? It's like, shit, he got $1 million and it's a whole crowd of people running over there. You know what I mean? With proposals, pictures. And when some people want to, I never touched a millionaire, I never took a picture. Some people like, you got $1 million. I know it, 10,000 ain't nothing to him. Or somebody be like, man, at least 100,000. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, man, that's cold blooded. You get $1 million with no instructions. Like, imagine if you were not who you were. And I imagine you were in college and you're doing all this research. And I'm like, you know what, Prim? I love this mental health research paper. Here's $1 million. God. It's yours.
I would do nothing responsible with it.
You what?
The first thing
you're going to do is nothing responsible.
No.
You're going to go and go.
We're going to go celebrate.
Shit. Yeah, you're going to go. We're going to celebrate. And it's like, damn, okay, what do I want? What did I always want? All right, I wanted this car. Okay, I'm going to go get me some shoes. Mm-hmm. You got to go get your fit and all that shit, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's like, man, I'm going to take my best friend. And then you spending all this money on yourself. You're like, damn, I can't keep leave my best friend out. Let me get them fresh. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, we going out. It's like, oh, we, you don't want your homegirls dirty and dusty. You know what I'm saying? you can't go up and then they go down. You know what I mean? So you got to get them right. You know? So that first day, that first day you balling. You know what I mean? You balling. And that shit feel good.
Right.
You know, it's like, damn, I did something. Now you got this brand new car. You just burning rubber around all around the city area. You know, like you wasting gas. Yeah, you forgot to buy a place. You're like, oh shit, I gotta go get some. I gotta get a place to stay. Then it's like, oh, I ain't got no furniture. You gotta go get furniture. You know what I mean? And it's like you just doing shit. You just doing shit because it's like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. Now here's the problem. I gave you the million. Now, somebody know I gave you the million. Mm. Now, they're going to say, hey, this is what you need to do. And you got four people like that. And you're going to have to figure out who are you going to listen to. The financial person is telling you, or if they're smart, to put this shit in the bank and don't do nothing. Man, I don't want to hear that shit. Get out of here. Your parents or friend or confidant. That may be saying, hey, if you need help, I know some people that can help you, da 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 da, that may not have $1 million, but can help you. Then you're going to talk to the millionaire, and it's going to say, don't spend your money. Don't give nobody shit. Don't buy nobody shit because it ain't a lot of money. You know what I mean? And then you're going to meet the person, and it could be the friend, the best friend, the auntie, the mama, the cousin, whomever it is. That's gonna say, yo, you know what you gotta do. Look at your shoes. You gotta go get yourself right. And they just gonna be there to just make sure you spending because some fruit gonna fall off that tree if they keep you in this space. So that $1 million, you know what I mean? That money is like, that money can move. But not that money can move and move you and move people and people can move you. And so it's like almost like a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
And then like that's your money. Now you have to go out with all this shit that's happening over here and the attention to your money and then go try to perform. And then people say, well, you're worth it. He's not worth it. And this and that. And then that's where that anxiety exists. As well as this anxiety, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's like, you know, the athlete is sitting in the middle and all the time is saying like, all I need is this. All I need is this. Like you're trying to figure out what you need so you can just be better and perform well and be great for the people that are giving you the most anxiety.
And everybody needs something from you.
Yep.
And wants something from you.
Absolutely.
Team, organizations, absolutely. Fans, league, culture, absolutely. Family, friends, cousins, people coming out of the woodwork, now knowing who you are, your money is out there, your contract, your $65 million max deal.
Nobody's giving you anything. You are paying for everything.
So that's why athletes talk about how isolating it feels. It probably feels like you're just on this island.
And that's why you see like a lot of athletes, like they trainers become their best friends because it's like, man, I'm paying them, I'm getting results. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like maybe easier to just pay my trainer to be around and like I don't have to deal with somebody who's not giving me something that I can't benefit from.
So spinning it forward from basketball, what's the BD manual? What's if you could create a manual? Initial stages, obviously, yikes. Because there's going to be a lot of iterations of this manual.
I'm 50 pages. It's going to be 50 pages to start. I would say the BD manual, purpose over profit. Hmm. Always make sure that your purpose far exists past your profit. Because that means you're doing something you love and there's no amounts, they can pay you whatever, you're still gonna do it for it. So, and then also purpose over profit means when you do get money, right? That the money you get should fulfill your, you should be getting that because you're fulfilling your purpose, and your purpose is going to have a much bigger impact. Number two is curiosity. Be curious. Listen. Because curiosity is how you evolve. Listening is free. You know what I mean? Usually.
I mean, listening to great people. No, not a lot of people free. Do it. You get
podcasts, a great show, podcasts, self-help, listen. Listening is free. And so your curiosity and listening should translate into three is trying things and knowing that failure leads to success. And that's how I take chances.
Having space for failure and mistakes.
Always. You leave enough, you be so nimble that you always leave room for mistakes or failure, because you may fail doing something and it may click, and that is what you need to grow it. So you don't start growing your success, you know, just based off your success. You have to grow or solve or prove success based off failure.
Mm-hmm. So after kind of touching on all these different chapters, and hopefully in a different way that you haven't really tackled before, how did you do it? And I'm curious, I'm going to ask you that. Therapy.
Shit, therapy. You need therapy. You need a team. You need friends. You need business people. You need mentors. You know, it's like you need the same shit you needed as a kid. And you need to go find that kid in yourself and look at that kid, and don't be ashamed of the negative shit that kid was going through, but look at how smart that fucking kid was to navigate, right, to get you here. Because if it wasn't for that kid, right, and the beauty, the innocence, the intelligence, you know what I mean, the hunger, the dream, like just the drive and that, like go find that kid. And then start seeing, like, who are the people who helped impact that kid? And then you deserve to do this for yourself as an adult.
Have you been in therapy for a while? Like, are you in it now?
Everybody needs a therapist.
I agree. I've been with mine for 10 years.
When you get $1 million and you come from any hood or broken situation and you're a professional athlete, go invest yourself in a fucking therapist. At least you got somebody that you can talk to, that can trust you, that you can trust. And if you're lying to them, you're fucking retarded. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. If you're lying to them, it's just the dumbest thing that you can do. And it's like you're lying to yourself. So it just gives you the opportunity to be honest, to hear yourself, to work through situations, to unravel that Rubik's Cube and like build clarity.
Yeah. How long have you been in therapy?
All my life.
All your life? But how long? Like, literally?
No, I'm just saying, my life is therapy.
Oh. Well, I've been with mine for 10 years, but when you talked about...
I graduated from my therapist. She told me I graduated. I was mad as shit.
She terminated with you. She's like, you're good, and she set
you
like, free.
She's like, you're good, you're graduating. I was like, hell no, where you going? Like, you are finding somebody new? Shit. Don't send me back out in this world to think, to think alone.
I'm so glad my therapist didn't do that. For those that don't know, some of them had the orientation of like, once you achieve a certain amount of progress, they will have to cut ties because it's like, we've achieved what we needed to achieve. We can't go further. Fortunately, my therapist hasn't done that with me yet. I'm like, don't go.
I know, I'm about to go do some more fucked up shit, so she'll take me back.
but what you were saying about like, go back and find and listen to that little kid in you sounded like
therapy.
Because that's what that's an experience that the therapist was always do. Like, what is Prim, the 5-year-old Prim, want? And anytime they ask you that, what does the 5-year-old Baron want? You'll always know. They know what. Yeah, you'll start crying, yeah. But then you'll get to the answer of Absolutely. What your North Star of what Absolutely. You really need. Isn't Absolutely. It fascinating that Absolutely. Like the 5-year-old you will always know what's better well, for you?
And then like when you put yourself, yeah, like your child self knows what the best thing you need for yourself as an adult.
So as we're kind of like wrapping this up, what does the little Baron need for himself today in 2022?
A house, security, just comfortable, you know what I mean? Safe, being safe. And my kids, and then just like opportunity to just get out and do whatever we want. Yeah, I would say more so like just an appreciation of like waking up every day.
That's very simple needs. Very simple, but very valuable. And what do you want people to know about you? Because a lot of people know a lot of things about you, mm-hmm. but they may not know you as a human being and a person as you stand today. So what would you like people to know about you?
I don't care. I don't give a shit about these people. I don't care what they think about me.
No, really?
This is a bad joke. What do I want people to know about me? I don't know. That is like, it's hard for me to answer questions like that because, I don't really, like, you don't know what you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care to, like, I don't have anything to broadcast or promote. You know what I mean? I just here to share, mm-hmm. share my journey, share what I've learned, what I'm curious about, what I want to know. That's it. Like, you know, people can get to know me if they want. I'm very creative. Maybe that's what people. I got an album coming out, or I guess.
You do?
I created a character because I did not want. Like, I started like making beats and rapping when I got divorced and shit, and so I like created a character and a whole like voice and sound for this character, and like, you know, like that's. I'm like really creative. I guess that's what I want people to know is like I love like creating stories, TV shows, music, things like that.
Yeah. That's a great answer, you know, and you are creative, and I appreciate your creativity here at Slick and all the things that you're doing. And also I just want to express my gratitude for your partnership and supporting these concepts, many of which are led by minorities and members from historically marginalized communities, and my show as well. It really means a lot. And I hope this conversation sheds light on your journey and really like how you did it, because how you did it is like pretty amazing. It really is.
No, this show is dope. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
I loved what BD said about purpose over profit. And it resonates even with me today as I continue to make this career transition from sports broadcasting and media into the field of psychology, because it's just a good and simple reminder that we should never be driven by the outcome or end result, whether it be winning or money or fame or any sort of external validation. We should always be guided by our purpose in life, because that's going to give us the bigger picture perspective we need to remain motivated, to keep on our head on straight, and to stick to our path, no matter how hard it gets. Really hope you enjoyed today's conversation. For more episodes, you know the drill, just visit our show page on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts. And to watch the full version of these interviews, you can head on over to YouTube, just search for The Next Chapter with Prims Ripipat. Subscribe to us, like us, give us a star rating. We really appreciate you showing your support. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Prim_Ripipat. The Next Chapter with Prims Ripipat is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.